Will your church be one of the issues, etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, etc. 300. Have you ever wondered, have you ever noticed, that when some public debate on the life issue is taking place, by and large, the faces and the voices on the pro-choice side are women? And by and large, not exclusively, but especially with regard to our national politicians, the faces and the voices on the pro-life side are male? Now, if you look at the way that the American public polls on this, women are, by a very small majority in America, trending pro-life. So why are there so few pro-life politicians, female politicians, at the national level? Things may be changing. We're going to talk about the growing popularity of pro-life women in politics with Ramesh Panuru. He's senior editor for National Review. He's author of the book, The Party of Death, The Democrats, the Media, the Courts, and the Disregard for Human Life. He's also written an op-ed piece for the New York Times titled, The Year of the Pro-Life Woman. Ramesh, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Ramesh, why do you think that pro-life women are typically underrepresented in government?
Well, you know, it is a really shocking amount of underrepresentation. For any other group, there'd be marches in Washington about it. You know, roughly speaking, something like a quarter of this country is made up of pro-life women, and yet there are zero pro-life women in the Senate, only about 13 in the House, one pro-life woman governor in the United States. And I think largely that's been because the women who first started running for office over the last generation or two have tended to be feminists, and liberal feminists have defined abortion as one of their central issues, unfortunately.
Let's talk a little bit about the kind of the lay of the landscape. You write that this dearth of pro-life women in the public eye has given the pro-choice movement a political opportunity. What do you mean?
Well, it has made it easier for the pro-abortion side to suggest that the pro-life cause is about putting women in their place. It's about holding women back. It's hostile to women. And when we haven't, you know, when these debates happen in Congress, in the Senate, we haven't had conservative pro-life women on the other side of it. All the women have been with the pro-abortion side, and it has made it very easy to suggest that women are pro-choice and that the pro-life movement's anti-women.
So you have listed at least four women who have the prospect, pro-life women have the prospect of entering government in the near future. What's changed? When did it begin? When did the tide begin to turn for pro-life women in the public eye and in government?
Well, you know, I think that this is just one of those things that gradually bubbles up, and then it just sort of all of a sudden happens, much like the when you had four women get into the Senate in 1992, unfortunately, all of them pro-choice liberal Democrats. I think one thing that happened this year is this is just a good year for conservative politicians, including pro-lifers, and that's it's a good year for outsiders, and that's encouraged a lot of women to throw their hats in the ring, as the saying goes. One thing that has probably helped was Sarah Palin. When she was picked by McCain in 2008, she became the most prominent pro-life woman that American politics has ever produced. And, you know, she has helped out with some of these candidates. She endorsed Carly Fiorina in her run for the Senate in California. She endorsed Nikki Haley in her run for governor in South Carolina. And no question that presence of Palin excited a lot of pro-life women, including people who hadn't really been engaged in politics before.
How do you expect, if there are some successes here, how do you expect the public debate on abortion to change? In particular, kind of the photo op public debate on abortion to change?
Well, you know, pro-lifers have been gaining ground over the last decade and a half. Public opinion has been moving in our direction, and I think that this is going to be another step forward because it's going to be that much harder for the Barbara Boxers of the world to maintain that opposition to abortion and other attacks on innocent human life are rooted in hostility to women. And in fact, it's quite possible that Barbara Boxer won't be around in the Senate in the future when these issues come up because she'll be defeated by a pro-life woman, Carly Fiorina.
Will it also, in a sense, change the public face of feminism, Ramesh?
Well, you know, it might. Feminism is in a lot of ways has had an identity crisis for years and years now. And whether, you know, it depends on how these women handle themselves and whether they themselves want to claim the feminist label, as some of them do. If they do, then they could change the face of feminism. But whether or not they do that, they change the face of women in politics. They change the face of professional career women who are active in public life.
Will it also raise the specific mention of abortion and the pro-life issue for political debates in the future? Usually it's all kind of the meta-narrative behind a lot of what we're talking about, women's rights, women's issues.
Yeah. Well, look, my sense is that female pro-lifers in politics are less defensive about the issue, less scared about raising it or about getting a question about it. And so I think that also is going to be an advantage. That's something that's going to help pro-lifers in the future.
President Barack Obama has probably talked about abortion publicly, perhaps been forced to talk about it publicly with the health care debate, as much as any other president. And he's the most pro-choice president we have had and is in some sense kind of the leadership of the pro-choice movement. Will it force him to deal with it more honestly?
Well, I'm not sure that is within the realm of the humanly possible. This president, you know, he understands that being seen as the pro-abortion extremist that he is a political liability. And so he has done quite a bit to muddy the waters. But, you know, one thing that might happen is if some of these women do help sort of raise this issue. I think one issue, you know, and you raised it yourself, the question of Obamacare, which subsidizes abortion, that's got to be an issue in the next Congress, and I hope that some of these women take the lead in fighting to roll back those abortion subsidies.
The Senate is obviously the toughest club to enter if you're a woman, if you're a pro-life woman. What would the first pro-life woman in the Senate, what would she face, do you think, by way of obstacles?
Well, Elizabeth Dole was a pro-life woman in the Senate, but she lost her election in 2008, so that's why they're currently zero. I think, and in this case, I think there's going to be sort of strength in numbers. There's, you know, there's going to be a sort of a little caucus, and there's you know, if they decide to leverage their power, they could be very effective. Now, none of these pro-life women are running exclusively largely on the abortion issue. It is one of the things that they stand for. And understandably, some of them are going to be most interested in getting control of the debt. Some of them are going to be more interested in strengthening the country's foreign policy. But I think that when there are opportunities to speak out on the issue of life, they are going to have a certain extra attention paid to them and an extra amount of effectiveness as well.
Do you think it'll also help in educating the public in the real demographic lay of the land when it comes to public opinion on abortion and other life issues?
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons I went into the polling data on abortion in my book, The Party of Death, is that I think a lot of people have been led to believe that the pro-life position is this small minority view, and in fact, it's not. It is roughly half the country, and I do think that one of the reasons the pro-choice side has tried to convince people that there's a pro-choice majority is to sort of intimidate people into not speaking up. And the more people we have out there who are vocally, passionately, thoughtfully pro-life, the easier it will be for other people to see, hey, you know, this isn't this crazy fringe position, and I can speak out about my convictions.
You spoke a moment ago about the realm of the humanly possible. Do you think it's humanly possible in the near future that there would, in fact, be a pro-life Democrat woman serving someplace in national government?
You know, it is hard to see that right now. The party, I mean, there was in the 90s, there was a pro-life female governor of Kansas, Democrat, Joan Finney. But the party has become so monolithically pro-abortion, and even the people who still call themselves pro-life, a lot of them ended up voting for Obamacare, abortion subsidies and all. So I think at this point it is very hard, it's going to take some doing for pro-life Democrats of any kind, a male or female, to reestablish themselves as a credible force.
Ramesh Panuru is senior editor of National Review, author of the book The Party of Death, The Democrats, the Media, the Courts, and the Disregard for Human Life. You can purchase this book at our website and read his columns, issuesetc.org. He's written an op-ed piece for the New York Times titled The Year of the Pro-Life Woman. Ramesh, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're welcome.
Well, when we come back, we're going to turn to the subject of priestly abuse in the Roman Catholic Church. Just about the time that the scandal broke in 2003, it became evident that for decades, the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church had been relying largely on, well, the tool of psychology, not only for dealing with abusive priests, but for guidance on how to deal with the recidivism of the abusive priests. We're going to talk about confession of sins, modern psychology, and the priestly abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. Stay tuned. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
LCMS Inc. canceled this? You're listening to Issues Etc.
Check out the new Issues Etc. YouTube video, A Cloud of Witnesses.
What went for Mary, the angel speaks in her ear and changes who she is precisely what happens to every Christian. The Lord speaks and he changes you.
James is a great example to us of sober-minded churchmanship.
The cross looms over all of John's ministry. It's about the cross, the Lamb of God.
We see in Nicholas his love of Jesus Christ acting out in mercy for his neighbors. And we see a role model there that we can imitate.
The church, when she sets the day aside to remember St. Elizabeth, is remembering this shining light of benevolent charity and humility.
It's not a popular position, you know, to stand for true doctrine, and yet that's what Ambrose does.
You can watch A Cloud of Witnesses, our new YouTube video, under the support page at issuesetc.org. Historic, authentic Christian radio. Issues, etc.